There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right. Hour number two, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. And we'll go to the phones and the text line here in just 1 second. I do want to say, coming up in just about 10 minutes or so, Daniel Smith, economist. We used to talk to him a bunch on the show. He was at Troy for a long time, for 5-6 years, maybe longer than that. He's now at Middle Tennessee State University, still doing that thing, that economics thing. He's really an interesting guy to talk to. He's going to join us to talk about the economics of this coronavirus fight. We'll do that coming up later on this hour. I do also want to say, tip of the hat, thank you, Abby in Midtown. Thank you. And Abby, one of those people that gives me a nickname or something to put on the text line. Thank you. Abby was asking for the contact info for USA Children and Women's Hospital because, well, Abby had masks. And if you have N95 or higher mask, USA Children's and Women's Hospital needs them. Also, I got a note here that Providence Hospital looking for bulk hand sanitizer. You know, it doesn't amaze me anymore because I've been with y'all for 11 years with this radio station, but just an awesome audience. When it's time to help out folks right here at home, y'all step up and do it, and it just makes me... So, I mean, just continue to be proud of where I'm from. You know, it's awesome, awesome. So, and once again, if you stumble upon some of those masks, I thought I had some. I looked all through the stinking shop yesterday. Thought I had them. I don't know where they went. We moved. But I had them. You do fiberglass work or sanding. You got those masks. Check out if they're N95, if they're new in the bag or the blister pack. Let's take those to the folks on the front line of this fight. The people in the medical field, and specifically that great, great facility here, USA Children's and Women's Hospital. So thank you, Abby, and everybody else making those donations out there. Let's see. Let's go to Tim in Mobile first up. Tim, you work in the food industry?
No, I don't, but that's what concerned me. I recently purchased some food to go from one to give to an elderly person, but then it dawned on me, what is the food industry doing to make sure the particular restaurant that you order from, I know they don't want you in there, but what about the employees that mm-hmm. are working there? Are we safe to assume that they aren't, you know, contagious or anything like that when you do that transaction at different places that you go?
Well, okay, so... As That's always, I can only speak for two restaurants that I know the people at, right, that I ask this question. Right. I don't know what happens at the others, but I'm sure their standards, they are like beyond going through the cleaning process, you know, in their restaurant and in their facilities and with their workers. And the food, I heard that discussed, the food, I think Maws put something out today about the water supply, that it was fine. I never assumed... You know, the virus can't be carried. A virus has to have a host, right? After a certain period of time, has to have a host. But they said in the food portion, in cooking the food, there's no issue. In other words, if it's on the food, I guess if you had somebody who was contagious and sneezed on the food, you hear these stories about punk kids out there sneezing on groceries and stuff. Like, I guess that would be an issue.
That's that's what I'm thinking. When you purchase it and they hand you the bag and they hand you your receipt and your change, that part of the transaction. That was one question. And then the other one was, when you mentioned about people getting the money if you lost your job, I think there's a lot of people who go check to check who are now having to spend more money for groceries with kids at home, now having to feed them directly versus, you know, either eating at school or whatever they may be doing, that they don't want to go leave the house to take them to get the free lunch or whatever, that could use that money also. So there's not necessarily losing your job, but also people who are being stretched to buy extra products and stuff like that to get through this time.
So, there you go. Tim, I appreciate you. I appreciate your opinion and your call. Your Aussie girl on the text line says, all that money the taxpayers worked for that, housed and clothed the illegals and criminals, you're darn right. Actually, she said, no, you're damn right. I'm taking $1,200 back. So there you go. That's what I'm saying. The attitude is it's a little different for different folks. I think the specific targeted relief for small business to be able to keep their employees on the payroll is a big deal, a very big deal for the turnaround of the economy. Somebody who loses their job because of, not because they didn't do their job, through a circumstance they can't control, I have no problem with them, in the general scope here, getting that relief money. And Tim makes a point, maybe this family or that has additional costs, but sometimes things just, and Mama always told me not to say this word, but I can say it legally. Sometimes things just suck, and the situation, that doesn't always mean you get a check. We have to at some point, and we do this, and we usually do this, be it a hurricane or after 9/11 or whatever, pull together and help out our fellow Americans. And that's just the way I see it, that if the person over here needs that check because they lost their job, is it tougher? Are we spending more money? Yes, obviously, because the amount of food we're eating in my house is a whole other story. But we're cleaning out the freezer. That's good. But there's more spending going on for a lot of people. I get, Tim, you have a valid point. At the same time, I think there's an attitude there that, if somebody else is getting it, I'm getting mine. Well, sometimes you have to say no. They don't say no in Washington, but sometimes we have to say no. All right, next up, Tara in Mobile. Hey, Tara.
Hey, first of all, can I say that having spent one of my careers as a food and beverage person,
yes,
as much complaining as everybody does sometimes, particularly here in Mobile, about the Board of Health, that you have to learn, you have to be educated, because a home kitchen is not the same as a commercial kitchen or a commercial establishment. So,
yeah.
Hopefully those people are following what's being taught. But my actual question here is, I haven't heard anybody discuss. It was my understanding, maybe I'm misinformed, please help me to understand. Weren't we, our biggest indebtment already was to China?
No. China holds, I got a lot of questions about that today, and China holds about 5% of our debt. I still don't think that, I'm not cool with that, but it's not, no. People said it's 100%, no, it's 5%. Still,
well,
it's over $1 trillion. It's still over $1 trillion, but, it's 5%.
Yeah, well, that's better. Thank you. I appreciate the peace of mind in knowing that, and I hope that everyone, let's just love each other as much as we can. I know that's corny, but hey, that's me, okay?
You know what? I'm with you on that one, Tara. I'm with you. Do right by others. It's a thing. It's a thing you learned in church, a thing you learned in kindergarten. It takes you a long way in this world. You give people the benefit of the doubt. Then, if they fail you, then you stomp them like a roach. But until that point, be kind. Give people the benefit of the doubt, okay? Look at that. Dalton, you're seeing Monty. Monty has got the merchandise like Abby does. He's put the picture of the N95 mask, new in box, right there. I'm going to give you the phone number right now, Monty. Boom. Just went through the text line at 343-0106. Y'all are awesome. Y'all are awesome. Making these donations of N95 or higher mask to USA Children's and Women's Hospital, because they do good stuff. Good, good stuff. Coming right back, Daniel Smith joins us on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. And part of the discussion as it comes to coronavirus, I've talked about this the whole time, the two tracks, right? And maybe we'll find out as time moves on, there are even more tracks. But two tracks, the medical portion of it, the fight against the virus itself, And then the other track that we've talked about, the viral contagion of a bad economy that has seemed to come at, in my memory, one of the most rapid paces ever. If you look back to just last month, kind of how things were working out in the economy, and then you look to today and what a change it is. And we talk about the economy, and it's good to have. This is somebody, you'll know his name when I say it, because you're like, man, he used to be on with Sean a whole bunch, and it's good to get him back on. Professor Daniel Smith is joining us now, Director of Political Economy Research Institute at Middle Tennessee State University, also Associate Professor of Economics at the Jones College of Business at MTSU, and also a direct descendant of the father of economics, Adam Smith. He joins us now. No, you don't. Have you ever traced that? Did you do the genealogy thing? Are you a direct descendant of Adam Smith?
I wish I could say yes, so bad, but unfortunately, no. Though if you trace my, you'll laugh at this, but if you trace my dissertation lineage back, I do go to Carl Menger, who is a famous economist. Not quite as famous as Adam Smith, but I'm proud to have that there.
That's cool. So it's in your blood.
It seems like it. I'm certainly glad to be back with you and your listeners in Alabama. I've missed you guys, so I certainly wish I was coming back under better circumstances, but still glad to be talking with you nonetheless.
You know, you and I have talked about, and I love our discussions, getting in different economic discussions. But yeah, this one is probably less looking at the clouds and philosophy to in this case, getting down to what's happening right now, and this economy that has tanked. I mean, and you may give me some comparisons that are in our past that are like this, but it is a pretty shocking turn in the economy from just a few weeks' time.
Absolutely, and it's something we haven't faced, and we were kind of living in a bubble. We should have known. I know a lot of infectious disease scholars were warning that this would eventually happen. So we should have been more prepared for something like this in hindsight, but here we are in a situation that we were completely unprepared for, and we've gone from 70 miles, going 70 miles down, per mile down the road, and we slammed on the brakes.
Yeah, big time. And I wonder if that, and this is more of the subjective than the objective, but I wonder if that forward speed, if we stay with the analogy, that 70 miles an hour, at least we can coast a little bit longer because we were going 70. If this would have hit when we were doing 35, maybe we'd have been in bigger trouble, or is that a factor, do you think?
Absolutely. I think, we have a Chevy. America's economy is a Chevy Corvette. We have a V8 under the hood. And, yeah, we slammed on the brakes, but, we still got some juice under the hood. And I'm pretty optimistic. Well, there's a range of estimates, and some of them are pretty dire. I am at least pretty optimistic that we can get the vehicle moving quickly again. But a lot of it depends on how bad the coronavirus ends up being.
Yeah, and this, if you're just joining us, talking to Professor Daniel Smith, we're talking about the economy right now and the overall estimates. Now, I've heard a lot of things. I want to kind of filter it through your mind. We've heard even Mnuchin was talking about, 20% plus unemployment. I've seen some things that have said 30%. That's I don't want to give words to it, but that's not just recession. That may be depression category if you got to 30% unemployment.
And it really depends on how long it is. So if we get a temporary spike of even up to 30% unemployment, but it's only for a month or a month and a half, that still might not meet the definition for a recession or depression. But certainly if it's sustained, and some of the most dire predictions say up to 18 months, then certainly it would probably classify as a depression.
But help me understand something here, and this is I've been talking about it for 2 weeks, and I've just been pontificating. Now you're a man with the degrees and the study in this. It seems to me the fundamentals of the economy have not changed. I mean, if we look at like the financial collapse of 07, there were fundamental issues with the economy. In this case, correct me here, but I mean, this is all driven by the virus, right? So if the virus was gone, if we could remove the virus somehow, magic wand tomorrow, is there something flawed in the economics and the fundamentals right now?
I think you're absolutely correct. The Great Depression, the financial crisis, there was something internally wrong with our financial system, and there's a necessary correction process which had to occur, which obviously takes a lot of time. This is completely different, as you're saying. This is an external shock to an otherwise very healthy economy. States, you know, the all-time rainy day funds for state governments is at an all-time high, so we're well-positioned. Unemployment was low. We had a very strong economy. So yes, if this goes away fairly quickly, there could be minimal damage. I think there'll still be some long-term structural changes because we're learning new things and people are going to start buying things differently. So yeah, employment and capital may shift permanently in response to this, but I think we get the economy running revved up pretty quickly.
Yeah, I want to get into some of that here in just a little bit. The effects on the economy long term, the chronic effects, or but acutely here in the short term. What about the spending? I mean, we're looking at a couple trillion dollars is going to go well beyond that in deficit spending, and I've got my own opinions about that. But right now, everybody's a Keynesian, right? Everybody's let's pour money into the system and keep it upright. Is there number one? Should we do that in your mind? And number two, is there one way of pouring money in that's better than another, or all the approaches better? I mean, what do you say when you look at this? What do you like? What do you not like?
The price tag is certainly hard to swallow. Never in my life would I think we were talking about a $2 trillion stimulus package. And as you said, we do not have the money to pay for this. This money's got to come from somewhere. We have to tax away. We have to take on debt. We have to engage in engage the printing press and print more money. And that's going to be a problem we're going to have to deal with eventually. Now that this looks like it's moving forward, and that worries me because while the economy was doing very well, physically we have not been very conservative. Over the last couple decades, we've been spending quite wildly, and that has left us susceptible to a crisis like this.
Yeah, you know, and this is something you and I talked about for years about that. And, the names have changed in the White House now, but still deficit spending is just business as usual. I mean, and I don't know, I feel like I'm the person with the strange hat on at the party if I ever talk about us, paying off deficits and working toward. Everybody's like, listen, nobody's going to call the debt. Everything's fine. Keep on moving.
Yes, and this is exactly the time when we, unpredictable, but we can expect a crisis, every 10 to 20 years. So throughout history, there's some type of crisis. Can't predict always how it's going to occur. But we should be prepared for that. And the traditional Keynesian argument for stimulus is that during good economic times, you run budget surpluses, and then during bad economic times, you run deficits. But we're just running deficits, outrageously high deficits,
right,
even during good times. So that leaves us really ill-equipped. We're not lean and mean to fight this like we should be.
I don't know, Daniel, if we could ever get back there. I just see too many people, both sides of the aisle, and people can pick their sacred cows or not, but there's too many people with their hands out, and there's an inability to say no in Washington.
Yes, and I really worry every time you see a crisis like this, government ratchets up in size and program, in the suppression of civil liberties, and you have to fight and claw those back after a crisis. It's usually, newfound powers are becoming the ordinary toolkits of politicians in office. So I'm really worried about some of the long-term consequences of what we're seeing right now.
So long-term consequences here on the civil liberties side, I mean, we've talked about that some on the show, but you can discuss that. And also new beachheads for where government can. I mean, we're talking about issues of maybe taking, and that happened during the financial crisis, but government taking stake in private companies, government moving in to dictate what is manufactured at a place, or that's at least one of the threats out there. Beyond that, what do we need to watch here?
Yeah, those are the main ones. I'm particularly concerned about the, government owning stock or bonds of private corporations. That's a big step towards looking more like socialism to me. The ability to restrict travel and restrict if people can open up a business, and probably the biggest one I'm concerned about is sending out checks to to individuals in a recession is going to become a permanent tool whenever the economy tanks, or even when unemployment goes higher than we like. Those have to be financed, and we certainly don't have the money in the bank account to pay for them, so it's going to end up being debt or inflation.
Right, so you're saying with this, a new beachhead established, and next time there's a crisis, people will say, well, last time you gave us money, why not this time?
Exactly, and if we do it enough, it could even become a permanent thing, like, well, we use this during a recession, why not provide these checks as a permanent basis, and people are, you know, there's actually representatives in Congress, like AOC, who argues for some type of universal basic income of $1,000, $2,000 a month for every American.
But, you know, if we had universal basic income, which is a whole other discussion, I would love to sit in your class one day and talk about this, but there's that whole discussion. But if we even had that in place, people would say they needed relief on top of that, right? I mean, just reset this and say everything's the same now except people have this universal basic income. They'd still say, but my extra job, my side hustle, whatever has gone away, I need to make ends meet.
Absolutely. I definitely fear that would happen.
Now, so on the pragmatic front, too, it's such a treat having you on again. Your take on a theory I've had, and this is just kind of a gut sense, human emotion, but I think if people get these checks, and I want to help people. I don't want to sound like, although I do have an argument with everybody getting the check versus those that are affected, but when people get those checks, the idea that 100% or any high percentage of that money is going right back in the economy seems questionable to me. I wonder if people don't go, hey, the situation's bad enough, the government's sending me money, I'm going to use just enough of this to get by, to eat and have shelter, and I'm holding on to the rest of it. Is there any evidence that happens, or is it to the contrary?
I think you're absolutely right. You have the natural ability to think like an economist. This is not a demand-side problem in the economy. People are still willing to buy consumption goods. I think people are still fairly optimistic. The problem is on the supply side. We don't have goods being produced, especially medical equipment. We don't have enough of that. We don't now have enough toilet paper on the shelf. So sending checks to consumers is only going to make that problem worse, because then you're going to increase the demand even further for these goods, and it's not going to fix the supply side problem.
I tell you what, we run to the news break here. We'll come back because I want to talk about the supply. It'll be interesting to get the professor's perspective on something that seems like it's pretty, you know, I mean, why would you have an economist talk about toilet paper? I don't know if he's ready to, but we're going to talk about that more with Professor Smith when we get back right here on Midday Mobile. You got a question, you can always text us at 343-0106. Be right back.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, and welcome back to our discussion with the Director of Political Economy Research Institute at Middle Tennessee State University, also Associate Professor of Economics, Jones College of Business at Middle Tennessee State University, and a friend of the show for a long time, Professor Daniel Smith, on with us talking economics. And if y'all remember that name, you're like, when did... Yeah, we used to talk a bunch. And you were at Troy for a long time, and then you moved up to MTSU.
Yes, I was at Troy University for 7 years, and yeah, we had a lot of really good conversations.
I say this all the time. It's not a platitude. I could talk to you for hours. Really good. Love to sit in on one of your courses. There's one of the opinions that you have in the unpopular opinion file that you and I have talked about a good bit in the past, and we've talked about it. Usually, I think it was in the aftermath of like a hurricane, natural disaster, issues like that. But it comes back around here in this discussion right now with coronavirus, which I argue is a natural disaster itself. And that's one of, you were talking about supply and demand and forcing people to only get a certain amount of a supply or only telling the retailers they can charge X number of dollars for something in the supply. In other words, it's price gouging, Daniel, right? It's a wrong thing to do.
Yeah, it's a quite a popular argument, especially during a time like this. People go to the store and they see a price higher than they usually are accustomed to. And their initial reaction, I think it's natural human emotion is, wow, they're taking advantage of me in the situation. But actually, I think that's a misunderstanding of the situation, and that type of thinking, if enacted into price gouging laws, can actually make the situation even worse for those very consumers.
What? I mean, we've been told that you're saying price gouging laws could make it worse for consumers. How's that?
So the higher price reflects the increase in demand. So as more people demand more of this good, supply hasn't changed because it's an unexpected increase in demand. So you see the shelves empty up pretty quickly. Well, as the shelves empty up, the store naturally has to raise the price in order to maintain the supply, as well as encourage suppliers to supply more of that good. So if you put in a price gouging law, which prevents that price from rising, you're going to encourage hoarding of that good, which is what we've been seeing. People don't need all the toilet paper that they've been buying, but instead they've been stocking up for, you know, maybe a 2-3 month supply, which is pretty ridiculous. And they certainly wouldn't be doing that if the price of toilet paper went higher. It also encourages misconsumption, probably not so much with something like toilet paper, but if you think of something like ice, we've seen after a natural disaster where people go and buy ice to keep their beer cold because the price of ice is kept low, but that doesn't leave it for the people that desperately need it to keep their medicine cold or keep their baby food cold. So you get hoarding, you get misconsumption, and then increasing the supply. Temporarily, it's very expensive. You got to pay workers overtime. You got to run the factory more intensive than usual. You got to buy more raw materials. We put in an unexpected increase for those materials. So it's very costly to ramp up production of toilet paper or other necessities real quickly in a situation like this. So that extra compensation in the form of the higher price induces suppliers to work overtime and pay that extra money. Provide those goods that are desperately needed.
Yeah, for those of y'all that react to this and say, well, that's just a bunch of academic book talk, let's go back to something Daniel said, that the price gouging law can affect the supply and how many people get it, right? I mean, that, because I've taken this over the years and said, when you don't have price gouging laws, you probably have a better allocation of the resource to more people. Is that a fair way to look at this?
Absolutely. And you can look back through U.S. history, look at the 1970s gas shortages. You can look at the Soviet Union or anywhere else where they've tried to keep prices artificially low. Every time they do that, you see the exact same outcome. You see increased demand, increased supply, and therefore a shortage.
But you got Republican governors and legislatures all over that pass these price gouging laws.
Yeah, they're giving in to, you know, the desire to get reelected rather than putting sound economic principles first. Because there is this popular fallacy that people have that emotional reaction, people don't understand the role that higher prices play. In fact, if you just let the higher prices exist and serve as a market clearing price, that's actually going to drive that price down because it's going to increase supply. So the only way to actually resolve that problem and get the goods to the people that need it is to allow that higher price, to provide that incentive, to give suppliers the inducement to ramp up production.
So, and in this also, I've been wondering, maybe y'all have done, maybe there has been research done in the economics world, but I've just been picturing the scarcity driving to demand to a level that is artificial. In other words, I wonder if you could have like a secret camera on in a store there, and you have, you know, one group comes through and the bins are full of whatever item it is. It's toilet paper, it's whatever, it's batteries. And then you go and you remove the majority, 80% of the stuff, 90% of the stuff from the bin, and have another group come through and then judge the buying behavior. I wonder if there's somewhere in our reptile part of our brain that we react to seeing scarcity in front of us in a retail that makes us want to buy more of that thing.
Absolutely. In fact, Johnny Carson, back I believe in the 1970s.
Famous economist, y'all. Famous economist Johnny Carson.
So on his evening show, he made a joke about toilet paper being in shortage, and there was no basis for this. He was just making a joke about it, and it actually created an artificial shortage overnight.
Oh, wow.
People heard him, thought it was true, and then went out and started buying it off the shelf. So we actually have kind of experiment like that when it wasn't a crisis situation of that exact same type of thing happening.
So it is true that even if we don't need the thing, the widget, whatever it is, if we think it's scarce, we're going to consume, we're going to purchase more of it than we normally would.
Absolutely. And I'll send that clip on so that you can
Along
with your listeners, because we actually had to come out and apologize for it a couple shows later. For creating this toilet paper shortage.
So Johnny Carson was the cause of a run on toilet paper. I've learned new things constantly here. Let's talk about, you kind of got into this a little bit in the previous segment, but I do want to ask you about, and this is bigger stuff, and I don't know how to, I'm just going to ask it and maybe you can weed through what I'm trying to ask. In the situation right now where small businesses, as always, are going to take it on the chin more during a down economy, and we could talk about the reason we don't have as much of a voice in Washington and all those things, that's politics. But the economics of it, I see a shift in jobs being offered by big companies. Amazon's ramping up, Walmart's ramping up, CVS is ramping up. At the same time, small business folks are laying off. Are we seeing a shift away? Is this, I mean, we've been seeing that trend, but is this an accelerant for that shift away from small business to everybody going to work for some big corporate monopoly, I mean, some big corporate entity?
It really depends on how long this whole shutdown lasts. If it remains temporary under, you know, within 1 to 2 months, I think it's just going to be a temporary shift, because a lot of these jobs are clearly marketed and stated at the forefront that, hey, this is a temporary job just for the shutdown, for this current big circumstance where we need more workers doing this. So I wouldn't read into it too much of a demise of small business in America. I'm actually quite thankful that these big businesses were there and had the capacity to service the American economy in this crisis. But I think after it, there actually may be a move towards smaller businesses as people are more fearful of, you know, going outside of their hometown, given that we now live in a world where a pandemic is possible.
But couldn't small businesses have filled in that, you know, while there's one big Walmart that can do it, but also a bunch of small businesses could fill the same need, right? And more, I mean, more people are employed by small business than any other category in the country. Why can't we
Absolutely.
Fill that need?
Yeah, and I think we are starting to see some small businesses innovate. We're seeing small distilleries convert to making hand sanitizer.
Right.
We're seeing some small niche clothing manufacturers moving over to making medical gowns or masks. So I think you're starting to see that creativity emerge. I think initially it was just a shock, especially if you're a small business owner. Oh my goodness, I have employees that I'm responsible to, and they won't be able to, you know, pay their mortgage and put food on their table. But now I think they're getting to that point where you're starting to see the American grit and spirit return. And, you know, I've never seen this. I've been very dismayed in the last year or so as people across the country turn to the word socialism.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought the American spirit was declining. But if we can take a small glimmer of hope out of this crisis, it is that we're seeing that grit and determination that I read about in history books about America rising out of the depths of the Great Depression, winning World War II, and then sparking the economic revival in the 1950s. That's the type of spirit I'm seeing right now as blue-collar workers, white-collar workers are just getting the job done all across America.
If you look at history like you're mentioning, it seems like, and maybe other countries can say this, but this is my country, and we respond very well as a nation to adversity. I hate that we have it, but adversity comes, you know, and we as a country have turned on a dime, I mean, whether it's a war effort or others, and made a big difference. So maybe you're right. Maybe this is a way for us to shine.
Absolutely. And I think it also will get people to appreciate capitalism, because you're now realizing how much you actually would be willing to pay for toilet paper or common necessities. And the fact is that during normal times, capitalism keeps the prices of those goods very low and reasonable, so you're getting a lot of consumer surplus. The economist at Duke University, Mike Munger, always asks, how much would you pay for a ticket to capitalism? As how much would you pay for the opportunity to shop at Walmart, Home Depot, and all these stores at Starbucks that serve you? And people are realizing that they'd actually be willing to pay a lot of money, if they had to be a participant in the market economy.
But we don't realize that until that place is closed down. I mean, that's just human nature, right? I mean, if it's a normal part of life, these things are there. You don't notice it. It's just normal until it's gone.
Absolutely. And then, once again, if we could take a glimmer of hope out of a very dire situation, I think that's another one that I see in this.
All right. Before we wrap up, so your projection here, Daniel, on the just from what you're seeing, I'm not putting you down on the, you know, right, but you feel we turn this around sooner than later, or what's your feeling?
I'm optimistic that we can alleviate some of the most the harshest shutdown measures. I still think social distancing is really important. We do need to flatten the curve to prevent overutilization of our hospitals. But the complete national shutdown of production is so economically costly and will also cost American lives. So I think we need to quickly find a way to get businesses back up and running in a safe manner. So entrepreneurs have to think of creative ways to get back to business, and then we can reduce the possible long-term damages from this.
So you do believe there's a middle way? There's one that keeps what you talked about, social distancing and trying to flatten that curve so the hospitals don't get overwhelmed. At the same time, it gets people working, gets commerce going. You do think we have a way?
Absolutely. We need to find a way, because a complete shutdown, people aren't producing the common necessities that we need. People are going to start starving. We won't get the groceries that we need to survive on, and that's going to lead to a very bad situation. I think we absolutely need to find a way, a middle way.
As always, I could talk to you for hours. Professor Daniel Smith, I always appreciate your time. People, you're one of my favorite followers on Twitter, so tell my listeners how to follow you.
Yeah, the easiest way is actually just to Google Daniel Smith on Twitter, Daniel J. Smith on Twitter. But my official Twitter handle is SmithNJ1.
All right, and once again, my theory that you're a direct descendant of Adam Smith is you're saying it's not true.
Well, it's not true, but I'll let your listeners believe that.
As always, man, I appreciate our time. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, 153 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Welcome back. You know, when I was talking to economist Daniel Smith there, we talked about commodities here in this economy, and we're focused on toilet paper and the discussion of scarcity, but also always a scarce item out there. It's what makes it so valuable. Precious metals. When I think about that discussion and where that's going, I check in with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. What's the situation now? What's gold doing? What's silver doing, Angelo?
Gold all of a sudden shot up again. It's right around $1,600 an ounce. So back up to where we sort of expected it to be. Silver on the ETF market is still low in the $14, $15 an ounce range. However, on the physical side, it's still trading somewhere around $19 or $20 an ounce in real time and in the real world. The good news is we planned ahead, sort of expected something to happen. I got 500 ounces in stock yesterday. I've got some more silver coming into stock tomorrow. So we have physical silver inventory right here at the shop. We can get people taken care of. Now, I will say it does sort of compare to the toilet paper saga. I might not have the brand you want, but we've got plenty available.
And you joke about the brand. People say, "What? There's brands." But y'all have you could just buy bullion as it is, but y'all sell this also in collectible form, something that has something beyond just the value of the precious metal.
We have everything from those Route 66 pieces to some privateer pirate style items, Darth Vader's, Mickey Mouse, and just the basic bullion items could be 1 ounce bars, 10 ounce bars, 1 ounce silver rounds, 90% junk coins, American Eagles. And some of those we have very limited supply of. Some of them we have plenty in stock.
All right. Tell folks how to come find you.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. Of course, they can find us online, mobilebaycoins.com. If you're somebody that wants to sort of hunker down and stay in place, give us a call at the shop, 725-1590. We are still shipping stuff out every day, so we can still take care of you.
All right, Angelo, thanks for checking in.
Yes, sir. You have a good one, buddy.
Hey, you too. Angelo checking in for Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. A lot of text here. Let me try to get to some of these here. Yeah, so there's so many questions here on the on what was rolled out in our conversation with Congressman Byrne. Now, you just heard in the news update, Lindsey Graham won that may derail this. I don't know how, what if he's really challenging it on its merits, or if he wants something in. We'll watch this as the Senate is. We're still waiting for that vote from the Senate, and of course, it would then go to the House for a vote. So we heard from Congressman Byrne. He thought maybe late tomorrow or Friday they would get on a plane and fly back up to Washington to vote in the House. But questions about the stimulus package and who... Here's what I know, because people are asking a lot about Social Security. I don't know that. I'm working on that, but I don't know that. But I do know this, that the first part, just the money, right? It's like $1,000 or $1,200 for individuals, $3,000 for families. That's based on, I think it's $99,000 or under for individuals, $150,000 for couples who would be eligible for that. And it doesn't matter if you lost your job or not. You know, that's one of the things that's I have a question with. But that's the first part. The second part I talked with the congressman about is that small business angle. That's really, I think, one of the bigger stories that is not getting a big discussion, you know, all over the place. A few people, I've heard a few discussions on Fox News about it and read a good bit. But if this goes through as described, what a big deal it is for small businesses to be able to go get a loan, government-backed loan. I think the total loan would be at 4%. But the amount of the loan that was used to pay for, I almost don't know what's left, but wages and salaries, utilities, rent, and this off the top of my head, it'll all be printed somewhere soon, probably. Utilities, rent, operating expenses like that, and even debt service on debt that was signed on before February 15th. I don't know why the date there is significant, but that would all be forgivable. In other words, in the loan, you get your loan. Let's do it for easy math. We get a loan for $10 to run our company, and we spend $8 of it on those things, salaries and operating expenses, utilities down the line, that then only 2% of that loan, $2, would be applicable under the 4%. A huge deal, huge deal. All right, it's 1:58. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Y'all have a great one. We'll talk in the morning for Mobile Mornings. That starts at 6. Remember, we're online 24/7, fmtalk1065.com. So much going on there, podcast, news, online opinion poll questions, all that good stuff. And in addition, find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All right, see you. Mañana.